Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What's up, everybody? This is Joe LaPuma. You are listening to the Complex Sneakers Podcast. To my right, Matt Welty.
Hey, what's up?
To my left, wearing all black, Brendan Dunn. Fresh off vacation. Welcome back.
I'm tired.
Black like your soul.
I keep mentioning it, but I've been up since like 4 a.m.
So. Okay. Been jet lag once. We've all been there. Just okay. Deal with it. Yo, I feel like I haven't been in this room in so long.
I know, because we banged out 2 episodes in 1 week. I left the country. I've been traveling around the globe. I look.
This guy has a Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer nose right now. Look at that sunburn.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen you with a sunburn.
I look sun-kissed, right?
Yeah, that's right. Sun-kissed.
Like orange?
Mm-hmm.
Sun-kissed?
Like a little bit, like a nice base going on? You know, now that it's getting kind of sunny?
I think it might peel, man.
I know. It's going to peel.
How we feeling? You guys had a busy day today.
We had a busy day, and I got back from vacation yesterday, and I've been up since 4 a.m.
How many times has he brought it up? Get the violins out.
You're in Egypt.
Jet lagged once? Come on, this is what we do. This is.
He was in Egypt. Yep. He was in Jordan.
That's right.
Went to the Jordan River.
The one thing about him, when he goes on vacation, he really is on vacation. You know, occasional text here and there, but... Hey, listen, we could have used your decision. We could have used your guidance in making some decisions, and this guy was nowhere to be found.
Let me say this, a sincere thank you to everybody who was not on vacation, who helped handle all the things that were going on at Soul Collector, at Complex during that time. Matt Welty, chief among them.
I've actually never taken a vacation in all my time at Complex.
You told me that, really? And I am so... I
don't really take
time...
that much.
Why?
But I've never go on those trips.
But I've done all these trips and all that sort of stuff for sneakers, but I've done weekends here and there.
Yeah, the
but
line
I've
is,
never done a whole week. I've never done that.
The line is very blurred because like we'll do press trips or I'll do the Kith trips, and I'm like, oh, it's a vacation, but it's really not.
Kith trip isn't a vacation?
Thursday to Sunday? Come on.
But it's a nice resort.
Yeah, but it's like a full vacation, not like your vacations.
You know what I do? It's airplane mode the whole week.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I would text him and then he wouldn't. I would text him and then like it wouldn't even get delivered, and then you'd hit me back like a day later.
Speaking of airplane mode and phones, this guy to my right went to the Red Bulls game yesterday, behaved himself. He wasn't in the police blotter this morning, but the phone, what happened?
R.I.P. Done.
Tell us what happened.
We won 3-2.
This is the first Red Bulls match of the
season,
the MLS season.
And as I tweeted out, Ninja and Ryan Scheckler were nowhere to be found.
They weren't your invited guest.
No, they were nowhere to support the team that they're now the faces of for some reason. But so they weren't around. But we won 3-2. Me and my friends are just having a couple drinks. Nothing crazy. Didn't get crazy or rowdy or anything. Just
what's the drink of choice at the games?
I actually got kind of upset about this because...
Of course he did.
But no. This year, they raised the prices on the beers.
Okay. Inside the stadium.
Inside the stadium. They usually give you like a 24-ounce beer, and they're usually like the more expensive ones were $13. And usually if they raise something, it's like 50 cents, right? Mm-hmm. They raised it from $13 to $14.50.
They got
to
pay Ninja, man.
Ooh.
That's kind of a big jump for the... Right?
Well, like you, their price went up.
Okay, let's not.
I was in the bathroom and I was about to check Instagram or whatever.
Okay. This is at the match?
No. This is at a bar in Harrison, New Jersey. Pull it out of my pocket. Just went to go.
Pause.
Go to check my phone and whatever. You know, your hand kind of jumbles sometimes when you.
Classic fumble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, classic fumble, but classic fumble went straight into the toilet bowl.
Oh, my God.
Wow. And so wait. Into the toilet bowl, like in. It splashed up and everything, like submerged.
It was like completely submerged.
Wow. And
you reached your hand in there?
I pulled it out. It was just, I think
and
it was just like,
pause.
I think it was just a reflex, right? Yeah. It went all the way and I pulled it out, like whatever.
Before you flushed?
Yeah, and then well, I hadn't even gone yet, but then I just, like, I think I, the button got hit on the side, mm-hmm. and the screen just, like you pulled the plug on it.
You knew,
like,
immediately your phone was toast.
Yeah, it was toast, so. I don't have a phone today.
It's like me on airplane mode.
And, you know, I was telling him he tweets about everything now. He tweets about everything. Save some content for us.
Do you know what this makes me wish, though? And I think me and Brendan had this conversation earlier.
And it's in reference to him tweeting about him putting the phone in the toilet. But no. Save some of the heat for us.
Talk about it.
Me and Brendan were talking about it, though. If Instagram, if you're listening, there needs to be a way to check your Instagram DMs on, like,
desktop. Because you're without phone right now, and you have a strong inkling that your DMs are fucking on fire.
Yeah.
They're fucking burning.
You know who
up.
You look like, dude?
Who?
I'll tell you who you look like. Ryan Russello.
I don't know that.
What is that?
So we have a podcast, so you guys both should know.
I know who he is. He's on ESPN, right?
He's on the Bill Simmons podcast. He's on The Ringer. We'll bleep that out so we don't give them any shine.
He didn't used to be on ESPN?
Yes.
The amount of celebrity doppelgangers Welty has?
He looks like him.
I don't see this one as much.
When I was sitting in the control room for the episode that you were just recording, I was like, yo, this dude looks like Ryan Russillo.
I see that one as much. I see it a little bit, like, in the face, but not...
I get so many people in my DMs just sending me photos of random people that look like Matt Welty.
I don't see that one as much. I see
today, though. I don't know what it is.
Did you see this one I tweeted?
Dude, that one was creepy.
This guy,
I have this. What do you mean? Did I see it? I have it saved in my
this
phone.
This guy is he's like a manager of a football team or something.
I mean, that looks exactly like you.
Look at this.
Yeah, the guy's got quite the schnoz.
Meanwhile,
in that
Dave Matthews interrupted twice on the podcast in a row. He's not even allowed in the room anymore. Look,
is he your scribe or something like that?
Scribe?
Like, he like writes down, like, he's like following you around, like,
nah.
Joe LaPuma's like needs are.
Nah, he counterbalances my.
Your craziness?
Psychosis?
Yes. Yes.
If you've never seen Joe LaPuma black on someone in the office.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been a while, right?
No. It was this morning and Friday.
I really missed one a was lot.
I
was here since 8 a.m.,
apologize, though.
So I don't know how.
You know, the thing about me is, you know, I was talking to someone today. It's the 10-minute rule. If I just didn't react.
If you take a walk.
Yeah, if I didn't react for 10 minutes. Everything is better in 10 minutes. I just got to take 10 minutes.
The maddest I think Joe ever got at us was actually for the Kyle Yamaguchi stuff when he got found out that Kyle Yamaguchi, who was Brendan huge fan of, was always stealing the samples from.
Wait, when did I get?
This was like 2013, and we had
before I worked here. Right?
Yeah, we had a freelancer, this guy Raja,
good guy.
Yeah, he had made a graphic for the lead image of the Nikes being stolen story, and it said just steal it, and he made a swoosh like a crowbar, and he
that's aggressive.
And he posted it, and Joe's like, you know, defend the Nike plug at all costs, and
yeah, like, right. But yeah, that's just.
And I remember me and a former coworker got a G chat from Joe LaPuma saying, "My office right now."
Yeah. All caps.
Yes. Slammed the door. We both got the same time. We both just get up, walk over,
just
slams
steal
the
just
door.
Just steal it could be better.
Principal's office,
and it was. What the fuck do you think you're doing?
Yeah, okay, so for people listening who said that he hasn't dry snitched in 2 episodes, dry snitch away. Here it is. He's back.
And you actually, I think it was the number one story on Complex.com, and you made Nick Christivo take it off the Facebook feed.
All right, well, we caught up enough. I think now it's time to introduce our guest for today, a very special guest on the podcast, a jack of all trades in our culture. Designer, model, director, and the first woman to ever get a Jordan collaboration, a staple in the streetwear and sneaker space. We're honored to have Vashti Kola on the Complex Sneakers podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having
Downtown
me.
Downtown sweetheart.
Yes.
OG, the GOAT.
Been doing it for a few decades now.
Yes. That sounds long. Yeah.
Are we jaded yet? Or you still get excited or what? Like, we've known each other for a while. When you were like Downtown sweetheart, like I was like an intern, and still get excited about things or what?
I still get excited. It's funny because I think I was in like the second issue of Complex.
Okay.
Wow. Like it was like street style.
Okay.
So that was exciting then, and this today is exciting. So I feel like I'm not jaded.
I love that. And of course, Matt Welty, before we were taping, asked Vashti if Full Size Run changed her life and how many people recognized her from it. And she said basically a baker's dozen. a baker's dozen recognized her.
I have had guests in the past tell me that after the appearance on the show that they didn't.
They had to change their phone number.
No, how many kids were hitting them up like before that?
I will say that it, you know, there definitely is an audience that I think kind of knew about me but didn't really. And mm-hmm. I think that that was like a nice, you know, kind of experience because people did hit me up like, oh, I didn't know who you were before this. So.
Yeah, Vashti was on Full Size Run March 2019, if I recall correctly. For the people who are listening who may not know who you are, how did you first get into the sneaker scene or the streetwear scene as it was back then, kind of formally? Like, how did you become a part of the New York cool people?
I think, okay, so I moved to New York in 99 and then,
from Albany.
From yep, Albany.
He knows. He'll use the same research tips.
I can't let that go.
He'll use the same research tips.
It's the capital. It's the capital.
great place to visit.
Yeah. And, I moved, but was always a tomboy, always wore sneakers and was obsessed with sneakers. And then I got a job at Stussy, which is under the James Chevy umbrella. It was Stussy Supreme Union. So mm-hmm. we were kind of like a family. And so buying sneakers from each other was like a thing. And
this is like 2000.
Yes. And I sort of became known as a girl who wore Jordans that just didn't live in the hood because that was like the hood girl look. Mm-hmm. You didn't really see girls in Manhattan wearing Jordans and t-shirts. So I think that naturally that kind of got me in. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, it was such a small circle then. So you kind of knew everyone. Mm-hmm. So I think that was really, it was just like the time.
What were the sneakers that you were buying back then? You mentioned like buying sneakers from those different stores in the umbrella. Like what shoes did you care about at that point?
At that point it was Dunks.
Yeah.
Dunks were huge.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I don't think I own a pair of Dunks now.
Really?
Yeah.
This is, I guess, like early SB, like Pro B.
Like thick tongue that weren't labeled SBs yet.
Exactly. It was like the New York Dunks, like the Supreme Dunks.
I'm sure, yeah.
Were those guys that you were around and the people you were around from those stores, were they as into it back then as like you see people are into it now? Or did they seem like they realized how big this was going to be, or did you?
No, there was absolutely no way to foresee it. I think for us it was like there was like the sneaker world that we knew in the United States, and then there was like, you know, international people. It was like Japanese kids just, it was like you would see them kind of like corralling for when a sneaker release would happen. So mm-hmm. you kind of just thought, oh, this is just us. This is like the world that we live in. But mm-hmm. for the people that worked at these stores, and I mean, for us, it was like we were into it, but we weren't like do or die. We weren't like so obsessed. But yeah, but then there were people who would, you know, sleep outside in line for sneakers.
When you look back at it, you know, like that whole scene's kind of known for like the whole like I'm cooler than you attitude of all the shop managers and, you know, like you can't shop here if you're not down with us. Do you look back at that and you're like, wow, that was kind of ridiculous?
Or was it like a myth and like you everyone was fine? It just was like they were intimidating.
I think because it was a different time, and I think it was really like, it's not like now where it's like if I saw someone on Instagram, I could go up to them and be like, hey, I follow you on Instagram. I don't know you, but like, mm-hmm. I think you're cool. And they'd be like, oh, I think you're cool too. And we could be friends. Like back then, it wasn't like that. It was, I mean, I'm sure you guys kind of know like the skate world, you know, the hip hop world. It was just like, who do you know? Mm-hmm. Like, are mm-hmm. you authentic? Are you not? So I think a lot of that was the people who worked in these stores. You know, they kind of came from that world and were authentic or sort of like the cool guy. So I don't think it was blown out of proportion because I, you know, again, I was also a kid from Albany who mm-hmm. just moved to New York. So I could understand them kind of being like, okay, who are you? Like, what are you doing? But it's like, it didn't take that much time for you to sort of like get cool with people. Or like paying your dues in a way.
Yeah. You mentioned like a bunch of rare sneakers that you had back in the day, you know, New York Dunks, Supreme Dunks. Were those things hard to get for you back then, or because you were part of this James Jebbia umbrella, it was just like never an issue for you to get a shoe that now is considered so rare and resells for so many thousands of dollars, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it wasn't hard at all. One, because I worked in one of the greatest places to work in, mm-hmm. in retail, but also just being a person who worked in retail, you made friends with everyone from Foot Locker to, back then it was Canal Jeans or whatever. It was like you kind of just had a community of people you knew, so mm-hmm. you could get things. But for me, it was also easier because I had a small shoe size. And at that point, not many girls were, you know, like dying for sneakers. Mm-hmm. So.
Right. One thing I noticed is that you always bring out kind of like archived pieces. And I think a lot of Air Force Ones, but for me, I remember being an intern at Complex and spending money on all like Supreme hoodies that I'm actually happy that I did now because like from 10 years ago, have you kept a lot of those pieces that you've accumulated over the years?
I have kept a lot. I think sneaker wise, I haven't. Mm-hmm. I read Marie Kondo's book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. I kind of...
You just threw everything away?
Have a rule? I really need that. Do you have like a rule of like 6 months and it's gone because it's like, it's getting too much?
Have you read her book?
No.
Read it. I swear to God. If you look at it as like an organizing book or decluttering book, you're missing the whole entire point of it. For me now, I'm like, if people gift me something, I know whether or not I'm going to wear it. Like, okay. I might wear it like just because I'm friends with the brand or whatever, mm-hmm. but the whole point of that book was like, does it spark joy? And if it doesn't, you just have to get rid of it. And it sounds kind of hippie, whatever, yeah. but it really works for me because it's like everything in my closet is like color coordinated, dark to light, like just...
How many shoes do you think you own in 2020?
I own less than 50.
God, wow. That's amazing. I wish. So you must have liquidated a lot over the years.
Yeah. But for me, it was always quality over quantity mm-hmm. because I never really... Like, I gravitated towards specific sneakers. So for me, I was never like living in like shoe boxes.
You still have the those Air Jordan 3s that you kind of became famous for? Are those still somewhere like hiding in the apartment?
I do, yeah. The grip on the bottom is completely like worn. But yeah.
Can you tell us about that shoe's significance to you personally?
Yeah, I think for me, so I grew up, my parents didn't buy me like name brand anything, which totally sucked. But so for me, I got made fun of for also not wearing any name brand sneaker. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up obsessed with sneakers, but specifically Jordans, because I mean, for me, it was like, that's like the top tier of mm-hmm. the sneaker. And I don't know why the Jordan 3 just always like stood out to me as like just the most pristine and chic. Even above the 1, which I do love the 1, but I feel like the 3 is just like everything to me.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And then later in life working with Jordan and that process, you know, I know you've talked about it a lot, but is it still like a pinch me moment for you?
Yes. I mean, it's still... It's weird because it's like sometimes I'll forget it happened and yeah. then people might bring it up like, oh, like you were the first or you, yeah. you know, you did this. And I'm like, yeah, and it's been so long too now that it almost still feels like so weird. But,
and there's kind of a connection, right? Because you had the Black Cement Jordan 3 sneaker cake mm-hmm. and then from that kind of gained the attention of the people at Jordan Brand and that turned into your project in 2010, the Vashti Air Jordan 2, right? Like, how did that actually work in terms of you picking colors and going back and forth designing
color.
The shoe?
Perfect
really,
color.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Definitely.
Thank you. So we did it all like through the mail actually because...
like snail mail?
Yes.
Okay.
So they would fed... Like I would give them... I gave them my color palette, which was ultimately what we ended up using, and they would then send me swatches and mm-hmm. it was just going back and forth.
Can you explain what the actual shoe looked like and like how you arrived at those colors?
Yes. So my brand is Violet. And so for me, you know, the color purple, violet, lavender, those shades are really colors that I gravitate towards, mm-hmm. even though I don't wear them that often in real life. But for me, it's just the idea that, you know, red and blue make purple. It's a balance. All of the things that purple represents was important to me. And I wanted to, you know, do the shoe in a color that was representative of me. But also I wanted to do it in a tone that wasn't too feminine. I wanted mm-hmm. it to be sort of on the cusp of masculine and feminine, mm. where if a guy saw it, he would say, okay, I want to wear that sneaker too. It doesn't look like a girl's sneaker. Mm-hmm. So that was important to find the right balance. And also there's elements of silver because it was a 25th anniversary.
And right. So, and that's why they were pushing the silhouette, the Jordan yeah. 2. Yeah.
Also amber was inside the shoe, the color amber, which is also something that you give someone for an anniversary.
Mm.
You said that there wasn't that many large sizes.
Yeah.
See, that sucks because I know a lot of NBA players would be wearing them in the tunnels today. Yeah.
Right.
Like I thought about that. Like I could see so many NBA players like because that design holds up today. And yeah, I could see a lot of NBA players walking through the tunnel in those twos.
Yeah. And the Air Jordan 2 is like a shoe you don't see a lot of collaborations on in mm-hmm. general. And I think it's interesting, too, because Don C, mm-hmm. you know, got to do it. And he said the shoe was inspired by... His wife's bag. What did you think about when you saw that interpretation of it? Did you?
I mean, I really liked it. It definitely felt sort of like connected mm-hmm. to maybe the shoe that I had done, but it felt different. I mean, it felt like his own, and I liked it.
It was like you were setting up the storyline, and then years later, he kind of continued it.
I don't think that's what happened.
No, I'm not saying he ripped you off. I just
a little bit of inspiration.
I'm not sure. But when I look at it, I'm like, oh, it reminds me of my shoe. But I don't, I wouldn't say that he, you know, copied that or, and that man has tons of inspiration and he creates amazing things.
I think I remember you telling us though, when we did the full size run episode, like before, after we shot that, like you didn't even remember like, or you were kind of frustrated that you didn't even know where the shoes were coming out at and you didn't know how many pairs they made. It was just kind of like dropped and you were kind of in the dark.
At the time, it was explained to me that they don't really share that information.
Not even with the person who made it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure they probably evolved over the years and they probably share that with the people they collaborate with. But it was definitely like I had no idea unless people had showed it like on at that point it was Twitter. So they would be like, oh, I just got these sneakers at True or whatever. So it was like that was the only way I kind of knew.
How many pairs did you get personally? Were you able to at least tell them that? Like, look, I made this shoe. I need.
Yeah, I got only a handful. I think I got like 10.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were those like in your size or like for your friends and family?
They were in my size. Some of them were smaller. That's for friends and family. Mm-hmm. But at some point they had talked about doing men's sizing of it. Mm-hmm. But then eventually they had run out of the materials to make the shoe. Mm-hmm. So they had stopped the production.
Mm. And going back before that, did you work at like the Nike ID studio at one point as well? Like even before the Jordan brand thing?
Was it 255?
Yes.
On Elizabeth Street? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was 2005 to 2006.
Yeah. How did you get involved with that?
Someone told me that they were hiring. Mm-hmm. And so I went in for an interview and it was basically talking about sneakers. And it was like a really like passionate place to work. Like mm-hmm. it was really all about sneakers and the culture. So I was one of the first people that they hired along with like a gang of people that went on to do like their own thing. Mm-hmm. But it was an amazing experience. Like I look back on that as like one of the best jobs I've ever had.
Wow.
Really, it was such an experience.
Can you explain the 255 space? Because I feel like a lot of people don't necessarily know how much of a predecessor it was to things like the Bespoke program. And
yes. So 255 Elizabeth, located at 255 Elizabeth Street in Manhattan, was basically like a private sneaker experience that was only for people who were invited. Mm-hmm. So you had to have like a card that was given to you
by Nike
for this experience. And it was generally in the very beginning, it was, you know, very VIP. It was like celebrities and athletes and that kind of thing, or people in the culture mm-hmm. who were like really well known for what they do. And it was an amazing space. Like you'd walk in and there was like this beautiful waiting area and a person at a front desk, which eventually became my position, which I loved. And then in the back, which you couldn't see immediately, was loungy couches set up in front of computers where you could have a one-on-one experience with someone who would help you design your sneaker. Mm-hmm. And also there was a wait service. You could have alcohol, coffee. They would hold a lot of events there. I remember Steve Jobs had an event with Apple. Wow. Kobe had an event there. And that's just wild.
That's
also
amazing. Wow.
So we would work those private events.
What other celebs were coming through there that you helped them like design shoes?
Yeah, any that stick out?
Besides Clark Kent and Mayer, who were probably there
every day. Yes, of course.
They were there all the time.
Yeah.
I don't really remember, actually.
Like, there was never a moment where you got, like, starstruck or anything? Did that ever happen to you?
No. I think that at that point, it was also, like, being young, but also being, like, New York and being, like, you mm-hmm. know, I'm tough. Like, you didn't want to ever show that you were, like, even if, I don't think I was that starstruck. I think it was just all, like, I was just shocked. Like, Robert De Niro came in.
Whoa, that's amazing.
Robert De Niro has a custom pair of Nike IDs.
I don't remember why he came in, but that was the thing. A lot of times there were these private events, and so celebrity friends would bring their celebrity friends, and so it was a thing. I remember him walking in and he took a picture with my coworker and he's like, and I took it for them. And he's like, come on, you and I take a photo. And I was like, no, I'm okay. And he's like, come on. And the photo is like me awkwardly like, hi.
Do
you remember what
one.
He designed at all?
I think he was just there. Like some people didn't care about getting sneakers. Yeah. Some people were just there.
They wouldn't give you a heads up that those people were coming in, just like a heads up, like Kobe Bryant's coming in.
Well, we didn't really know he was coming. We knew that the event was for a basketball team. I think it was a New York City basketball team that was really, really well known for playing. And he showed up for the event to like support. Mm. So
were you taking advantage of the services there? Like as an employee, could you just make shoes for yourself? I mean, for free or for discount?
Yeah, like I think that we had like a certain amount that we could get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's another shoe that you didn't necessarily keep over the years. Do Marie Kondo those away?
Yeah. But then I wore them a lot, so.
You got what you needed out of them?
Yeah, and I also, one of the models we had on deck was the Free, which I was obsessed with the Nike Free.
Mm-hmm. Good one.
So I always pushed it on people, and then people always got them because they tried them on and were like, okay, yeah, this is really comfortable.
Super comfortable.
Yeah.
How much do you keep in contact with the people from those days? You know, people who have gone on to be bigger at Nike, you know, guys like Israel Mateo, or, you know, I don't know if Will Whitney worked at that store at one point.
No, I don't know if he did, but he worked at Stussy. He was my manager at Stussy.
Really?
Yeah. So we keep in touch. Israel, I actually saw him at S&S Bar, and it was just really funny because we haven't seen each other in so long, so that was really amazing. Mm-hmm. He was there with our other coworker, Jonathan, who I think he does design something now, but it was really nice to see them. I became really good friends with Steven, who's a DJ now, DJ Huggy Bear. He was one of the security guards.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I see people every now and again, but it's not, I feel like everyone's doing their own thing and they're living elsewhere. So I don't really get to see them as often, but
yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Did you stay connected to Nike from that period? Because like you said, you worked there from 2005 to 2006, and then your Jordan brand collaboration didn't come until 2010. Like, how connected to the brand were you in that interim period?
The people that ran Nike ID were a marketing agency called Marketing Partners. So they were sort of the ones that kind of like were more connected with us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Nike people I knew personally, like we kept in contact, but we didn't really like do anything work-wise. I did direct something for Carmelo for Nike around that, like 2011. So it was after. But before that, I don't think that we had like kept in that much contact.
But you still very much cared about sneakers in that space.
Yeah.
After the Jordan, did any other brands approach you once it was like a few years went on to do stuff?
They might have. Actually, I don't really remember.
We had the Puma collection, right?
Yeah. So that came in 2014. Yeah.
Did that give you the same feeling or was it like a little different?
It was different. I mean, Jordan is Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
For me, Puma was a nice experience because it was having like full freedom to do whatever I wanted, both apparel and footwear.
More so than Jordan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a way different experience. It was much more invigorating and exciting. But I think that it was also knowing that, you know, at that point, Puma wasn't looked at as mm-hmm. doing much brand collaboration or at least like forward brand stuff.
Yeah, not in the space like at all, right?
Right, like, yeah.
One thing I would say is in the recent years, we've seen women get their own Jordan. And how special is it for you to be the first one and then see someone like Aleli or Melody to get their own Jordans? And, you know, there's some sort of lineage that connects you guys together.
I think it's exciting. I feel like it's exciting, but it's also annoying because it's like, hello, like, why haven't you guys been doing this all along, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like me being the first is, like, super exciting, and it's like, yes, like, I did that. But it's also, like, seeing Aleli, it's like, I'm like, damn, bitch, you did that. And, like, even with Melody, I'm just, it's like, it doesn't lose its, like, excitement. Because mm-hmm. I think it's also, it's like, why does it have to be this thing of, like, female versus male? Like, it's still an exciting collaboration.
Does it annoy you that, like, kind of like in the rap world, you know, there's kind of like that kind of talk where there can only be like one female like rapper at a time. Do you kind of feel like it's kind of like that in streetwear or sneakers where there's can only be like the female collaborator who's doing it right now.
Yeah, I do. It's weirdly the same, which doesn't make much sense because, and there's so many different kinds of people, like Melody's like style is different than Aleli's. My style is different than whoever. So it's like, it's not like everyone's doing the same thing.
Do you think brands are creating enough like product geared towards women or having enough women involved in product creation at this point? Or do you think that they still have a long way to go?
Maybe behind the scenes, they have a lot of women involved, but I feel like they could be doing more with female designers, like out on the forefront. And I still feel like there is like a hole with, you know, product for women.
I think we've spoken about it here, but like Nike is always talking about how they have all these great women's lines and Jordan Brand is like seemingly previewing a new women's collection every 2 months. But then I go to like a sneaker store with my girlfriend and we're trying to like pick stuff out. And I'm like, there's really not that much good stuff. It's easy to like neglect how much of a disparity there is between the product.
Something that I want to talk about is like your peak fun in New York City. Like I remember the Cudi Chocolate Rain video and CSR and so much history. Like was there a group of years that was really, really fun? Like I know it's tough to pinpoint, but like, you know, back then seeing artists on the come up, how special was that for you?
Well, I feel like the years that were probably most exciting was like 2006 to 2010.
Okay.
That was like super, super exciting because it was also the time when, you know, like a lot of my friends who are like really big now, we were like no ones then, you know, like we were just sort of like.
Who were those people?
It was like Shane from Hood by Air.
Okay.
Angelo Vaque from Awake. Cudi, Theophilus London, and not to say that we were all hanging out together, but these were friends of mine. Mm-hmm. I feel like at that time it was just having fun.
Yeah.
You know, it was, we didn't even have social media then. So it was like, I mean, MySpace was the thing. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, the way to meet and build and hang out, but you weren't so sucked into your phone.
Right.
So it left room for just like being foolish. Like I started recording Shane from Hood by Air and my friend Raul, who does his brand Luar, doing Hood by Air TV, which was them doing like these funny hood girl accents and interviewing people. I mean, because we were so bored, you know, we had jobs and we were like making a little bit of money, but we didn't have like, we weren't doing that much. And that's sort of also how the Cudi video came up.
Yeah.
Like, and it was just, I don't even know why we thought of doing that, but I think I had just gotten my Mac computer and it had the camera built into it. So I was like, oh, let's make something.
Yeah.
And so it was just fun. Like we started off with one concept of like, okay, I'm writing a treatment for your music video, which I was at the time.
I remember that. What video? Treats is in it. I remember
Heaven at Night.
Yeah. Oh, I
and
love that.
Fat Jew is in
yes.
it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Heaven at Night. That's and it's a classic video. There's so many New York City. Like,
right. And that's the other thing. Like, Fat Jew was also, he was one of them. So it was just like, anyway. So yeah. So that just came out of like nowhere. It was fun because it was us meeting at Starbucks after work and like, you know, going to all these like industry parties because there was free food and free alcohol. Yeah. And sometimes that's probably the only time you would eat. Yeah. So
I've consumed a lot of miniature burgers. And
yeah. Right.
Hot dogs at brand events. I feel like when I first moved to New York for like the first 5 years at least, I was like subsiding mostly on
absolutely.
promo food items.
Every single T-Mobile event you were at.
But you also get the point too, and I know we've all been there where it's like you just kind of get like tired of it a little bit and you're like, I don't want to go out anymore.
Yeah.
When did you like, did you ever hit that point where you're just kind of like, hey, I'm over this?
I think I hit that point a few years ago. I think it's also just because it's like it can be overwhelming. I've learned now as like an adult in this world and in the industry that, you know, before I would go to events and not talk to people, but then I realized that's really rude. You know, like like for me, I was shy, but then I realized being shy can read as being a bitch or being rude or, you know, thinking you're better than someone else. So I had to learn to like go to events and engage and, you know, introduce myself. And so I think now I'm like, okay, that's exhausting. So
The only thing with that is like what I realize is that the people I would see at events, I would feel like I'm the polar opposite of them. They're like super loud, but some of them, like the fact that we're opposites really helped like become friends with them. And like you said, it can get exhausting, but it's also.
Do you still go to sneaker events? I feel like
Joe LaPuma does not go to sneaker events. He's like too famous for that.
No, it's not it. But I don't, not really. You know what I do?
You're missing
like,
out on a lot of free food.
Yeah, I do like birthdays and like things like that for friends.
I feel like you only go to events when it's like a flex that you're at the event.
I mean, I don't know.
We went to the Nike.
But
the
Nike like stuff like that.
I was second row. He was 10th row.
I was not 10th row.
No,
I had a clear view of Drake. We spoke about it already.
One thing that's really cool is I think you said it was fun back then. And every artist always says as much as they're grinding, the come up is the funnest part. And it seems like you were front and center for so many of the come ups that we see now that people have made amazing careers for themselves.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, I even at that time, it was like a discovery. And I remember I was walking around Cooper Union, the very prestigious art school, and this kid stopped me and was like, I have my senior show. I really want you to come to my art show. I'm a fan of yours. And I was like, okay. I was like, when is it? And I remember going to his art show. He gifted me a piece of his artwork. And then you guys had him at one of the Complex Con that I went to. He did a whole art exhibit. He shot Beyonce, pregnant. He's like a huge artist now. Awal Arisku.
This was a young kid that invited you in. And yeah, it's
yeah,
just
and now he's a huge artist. But I think that it was just, there was so much more discovery where there wasn't like a gain. Like you weren't like, okay, who can
clout chasing.
Right, it was like, oh, okay, like, you look cool.
What just goes to show, Joe, don't snub somebody at the next sneaker event.
I don't snub anyone.
What do you think of the kind of the like internet clout chasing? When I feel like, I don't know how much you pay attention to it, but I feel like I see a lot of like streetwear people nowadays who like throw on ridiculous outfits and go on Instagram just to try to like rack up the likes, but it doesn't feel like cool at all, you know, like, or authentic at
all. She distills her own water. You think she's looking at that stuff?
I don't know.
Past that.
The Discover page on Instagram like gets you like down some rabbit holes.
I got asked this question recently about clout chasing and they had to define it for me. I don't know what exactly, like, I don't know of anything off the top of my head of that specifically, but if it's the same thing that we talked about on the show, which was like, and I'll use like girls for this example, but girls who are in Supreme with like, you know, a game console thing, like where it's like, okay, obviously you're going for as many likes as possible. Mm-hmm. Like,
good example. Actually, here's a good example of the transition.
Is there a visual I can see?
How excited he gets, though? Whenever there's any sort, some sort of, he gets excited.
Kind of example of the transition, something that you kind of got known for, like the Supreme outfit, like the Foamposite outfit. Like that was like something that kind of caught, you know, the internet, but it was just something you wanted to wear. But I feel like you see a lot of kids nowadays who will buy like the most like, you know, ridiculous hypebeast trendy Supreme clothes and just try to wear it all at once, and it just doesn't seem cool anymore.
I guess you kind of have to be cool to pull it off.
Can we talk about your relationship with Supreme over the years? Like, where do you feel about the brand is now? Like,
did you see her jacket?
I mean, the brand is doing exceptionally well for, as you know, as a company and as a business. I think that for me as a consumer and as a fan and as a friend, you know, it's definitely, it's expanded in a way that is now like everywhere. Yeah. So now it's like, you know, it went from, for me, I'll say from my experience, it was like, oh, I felt like this was like a club that I belonged to that not many people knew about, which, you know, afforded some like luxuries of just feeling good about that, whatever that is. And now it's like a 10-year-old kid's wearing the same outfit I'm wearing and or some girl is just borrowing her boyfriend's clothes. And she, you know, so it's like, I think for me, it's definitely made me more like aware of the pieces that I wear or the
they made a Tupac hologram t-shirt.
Yeah,
what'd you think about that?
I saw the promo for it. I didn't actually see the t-shirt.
Why?
But
why?
I missed that.
Did you see the new Air Force ones, like the all white ones with the Supreme on the logo? I mean,
they released this week. It's like the box logo.
What do you think about those? Did you like those or is that for you?
I like those.
Yeah,
so do I.
I had an interesting conversation with someone who worked for the brand for a few years, and they were basically telling me how it just didn't feel the same in terms of the internal personnel. And, you know, they used to have this edge or this attitude, and now that they kind of have to answer to corporate overlords in some way where they kind of have to clean it up. You know what I mean?
I get that. And, you know, I can't speak for them, but also that happens in every single business. Like, every single business, literally, it's like you either remain very small and niche and, you know, you could strive. But once you get bigger, that's the thing. Like, they went like mainstream. So I get that, but also it's kind of like inevitable to me.
They sold out?
I don't know. You think they
didn't? I don't think so.
I think that they still cater to the core. It's like Supreme and Bape for young kids. Like whenever I'm talking to young kids from high school and middle school, it's always Supreme and Bape always come up as like the two still, which like
I'm still surprised that Bape came back around. You know what I mean? Like I really thought Bape was dead.
I love Bape still.
I love Bape. I thought that when it left, I didn't know how it was going to come back.
Yeah. What was your introduction to Bape? Because I feel like that was another one of those brands where like around the time that you kind of arrived in New York City, and that was a big deal.
Yes. So when I worked at Stussy and being involved in like all of the sneaker worlds, we would always get Japanese magazines of streetwear fashion, which was like literally like just sneaker porn, streetwear porn. It was Japanese kids with their style, which was usually it was like an urban style that it was just their interpretation, which was amazing because like the denim that they had and the I don't know, like the knits they had was amazing. But so a lot of them had Bape sneakers. And I remember there was one store, I'm forgetting the name of it, that you could buy them. But it was just the idea that you had like this one silhouette that was in every color you could imagine was just like a dream. But I'd never had a pair of those at that time.
I'm curious, what are your like shopping habits now? Like stores in New York City? Is it online? Like how do you pick your spots now?
So I hate shopping in real life. Like, I don't know why trying on clothes makes me so frustrated. But so I generally like to buy things online. And I mean, I would rather go to StockX than go to the store to Supreme. Like, I, as much as I love Supreme, I'm like, I'll just do that.
Wait, really? you have to pay for Supreme?
Sometimes, yeah.
Surprising.
But you don't mind paying resale prices?
No.
Same, yeah.
I mean, for me, like, it's just to go. I'm like, I get so drained.
Yeah.
And I also don't buy everything. I'm just like, oh, I like this one thing.
One thing per season, something like that. Not the Tupac hologram t-shirt.
I don't think I would. It's something that's me. But yeah, so I like to shop online and with waste and, you know, in 2020, just being more cognizant of what am I buying? Do I actually need this?
I got to slow down. I feel like I've done a good job, but I got to slow down more. Like this thing you're talking about, I was like, do I actually need this? Like I have to have people in my life. I don't know if you guys feel this way, but like who I kind of consult every time before I buy a sneaker where I'm like, am I going to regret this in 2 weeks? Is this going to be a shoe that sits in my room for 10 years? You know what I mean?
I just think for me, I just have to listen. Like people have told me like what you were talking about, basically that book. People have told me that you give stuff away that you haven't worn in like even 4 to 6 months, you will never really miss it. And I kind of just have to stick to that because the client's just getting too much.
But the book, okay, not that I'm like the PR for this book, but the book is really great because the thing is she talks about how you'll end up buying
this is the Marie Kondo book.
Yeah, you'll end up buying the same things over and over again. Like for like if it's women, it's like, oh, I buy the same like little black dress or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they never wear it. And then they keep replacing it over time. So it's just figuring out like it's just like really minor psychology of like, why do I keep buying something like this that I don't really care that much about?
I have to say, I think that is too much of a threat to the sneakerhead like psychology because like if you ever like that's exactly what we do is just buy the same thing over and over.
For me, I think it's more clothes though, like hoodie after hoodie after hoodie. Do you ever go back to see sneakers you have bought in the past and what they're worth now or not really?
No, that's a really... That'd be an exciting
exercise.
Should
I pull up the New York Dunks on StockX?
You should do it. Yeah. Like you should do that. You would be very, very surprised. Like sometimes I'm in my parents' basement when I go home and I'm like looking through things and then I'm like, oh, let me just look this up and you would be pleasantly surprised at some of the value of this stuff.
Have you seen Nike SB coming, like the comeback of it? Have you paid attention to that recently? Because like people like Travis Scott. Like he has like all the old SBs that you know that you probably had like back in the day and now he has like his own SB. Do you think it's cool to see like, you know, the younger generation kind of like recycle the style from like that era?
I think so. I mean, I think some of those silhouettes are just so classic. It's like you have to kind of reissue them. But it's nice because I think it's a resurgence. Like I think that maybe he didn't get to experience like the full like moment of an SB Dunk. So maybe he kind of had the idea of it. So it's nice that other people can relive that.
So you don't have like that, like I guess people call it like, the gatekeeping mentality of like, you weren't there back in the day. No?
He does. This guy does. Some people, quote unquote, AKA me.
That will age you so quickly.
Yes, tell him.
Let that go.
Yes, let that hurt go.
By the way, New York Dunks, not as expensive as I thought, but the last couple sales, like $1,000, $1,500, something like that.
Right. You're not like, oh, you weren't there, so you can't really buy.
No,
or
it's not.
Listen, I don't want to point any elbows, but this guy a little bit.
I don't know, because you're talking about the mentality, though, of like, you know, back when, you know, you first came to Soho and you kind of had to like be accepted into the cool guy crowd. So I didn't know if that mentality translated into the way you look at younger kids or anything like that.
No, it's still ingrained in me when I meet people. I'm just like, I don't know, like, who are you? Like, it takes me like a while before I can really let my guard down to become like cool with people. But that's just my own thing. But I'm not like, who are you? Who do you know? Like, and with that, I feel like with with living these moments, I feel like it keeps the culture alive. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? It's just part of it. And I think that that's like, that's the beauty of it.
Definitely. He sees an SB Dunk on the street. It's a 5-question quiz.
No, it's just funny.
And then if you don't get it, if you don't pass, he asked you to take them off.
No, it's just funny because I remember like you're talking about like those days of, you know, like, you know, hanging out with like skate kids and all that. I remember like skating growing up and like when I first started going to the skate park, like to be down with like the skater kids, it was like you had to drink hot sauce for 10 seconds. And that was like,
what? Really?
Yeah.
What? Whoa.
That was like,
did you have to do this initiation?
Well, what kind of initiation is that?
That was like, we were like 15 years old. Like,
did they made it? You do it?
Yeah. Everyone had to do it. Bro.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
And you're a better man for it.
Listen, yeah. I got stuffed in a locker in middle school once.
Over sneakers?
Not over
sneakers. How did you get out? That is frightening.
I don't know. I don't know. Good thing I'm not claustrophobic.
I am.
It was either that or you had to like let everyone, like there was like six guys and everyone like took a skateboard and like whacked you in like the thigh with it like as hard as they could.
Did you do that one too?
Yes, on like both ends of it.
So you did all of them.
Yeah, man, you had to.
Maybe you should start a new program to haze these kids and their SBs.
If he could, he would.
You, there was no type of initiation like that to work at Stussy. You didn't have to take a blood oath or
no,
anything.
No.
Yeah, you seem to be very focused like on whittling things down and the whole Marie Kondo thing, and you mentioned 50 or less sneakers that you own now, which like is an amazing goal and one that I've set for myself personally. But like, what does your daily rotation now look like, or what are the shoes that have stuck with you over the past couple decades that you're like, I had to keep this shoe, this meant too much for me to ever get rid of it?
My own Jordan,
of course.
And I'm obsessed with Aleli's Millennial Pink Jordan, which she gifted me.
Nice.
The Jordan 6.
Yes. I have the Jordan 3s in the black and white, which I like to wear. Now I really just stick to an Air Force 1.
White on white?
White on white, yeah.
A lot of older ones, too, you bring back, right?
Yeah.
Like I see, even on your Instagram, I see ones that are like so obscure.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
For Air Force Ones, do you have like the wear once rule, or do you don't care? Like,
no.
A white on white Air Force One.
I also grew up with like gutter white boys who took me to hardcore shows and like skated and BMX. So I have like part of that where it's like a little grimy, but then it's also like the shiny black side. So it's like a mix, but I'm not going to walk around with like, you know.
Remember, you're also a big fan of the Polo cookie boots.
Yes, I love those.
At the beginning of the podcast, I kind of like named some of what you've done. Was there one in recent years, one kind of like, whether it's DJing or, you know, you had the party for so many years, was there one thing that really you enjoyed more than the others or recently that you're really focused on, like a passion point?
I feel like they're all so different. Yeah. I think that lately DJing is much more gratifying because we're in this instant gratification moment where we just need to see results now. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to see like how you're affecting people like in the moment. Yeah. With directing, it was always exciting, but it just took so long before I could get to see what people thought of anything I'd done. And sometimes you don't hear people say anything. So that's also a different aspect of it. I feel like the design portion, and I feel like with that, it's really nice because it really embodies like creatively like what I'm experiencing or what has inspired me. Mm-hmm. So like with the Puma collection I did, it was like the first collection I did was dedicated to like B-boy culture from the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really like pinpointing what I thought of Puma at that era. So I think for me, it was like much more of a full experience. It was not only was it the product and the design, it was also the lookbook and doing a fashion show and all that. So I feel like that was also really fulfilling.
How'd you feel about the Drake shout out? You wrote a blog post about it, what it was referring to about the used to be with Vashti at Santos. What was that?
Yeah.
Like, did you get a heads up or you just heard it when everyone else did?
Someone who worked on the album sent me a text and was like, hey, just so you know, I'm working on this Drake album and he shouts you out. And I was like, oh God, what does he say? Because I mean, I don't know, like I know him, but I don't know him that well. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I don't know what could it be? My name rhymes with so many like problematic things. So,
oh my God.
So I wasn't sure, but then I heard it and I was like, oh my God, it was such a nice like mention.
Yeah.
And also just it encapsulated that time of 2006 to 2010, just also doing the parties at Santos, which, you know, at that time he came to the party and no one knew who he was.
Yeah.
And my manager at the time was cousins with his manager, so he would come every now and again. And then I remember seeing him going to see him perform at SOBs, and going to like Cypher Sound's comedy show and with him at the table. So it was just like, it was such an interesting time because it was just like, again, kids who like were just figuring it
out. Trying to make it.
Yeah.
Well, Vashti, we can't thank you enough for coming through and doing the podcast. I think your perspective on things is something that is unmatched. And, you know, the biggest thing for me is like, you really were there and had a front row seat to see all of these successful people and work with them. And definitely a legend in the game. And the fact that we've known each other for a while and we're doing this is just like an honor for us. And thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
I want to say too, I think like Vashti was one of those internet cool people who like I aspired to be like in a way before, 100%. You know, because like before I moved to New York in 2012, I had never been here. So like my connection to the sneaker scene all came through the internet. And I remember seeing like the photo you had of your sneakers like lined up in your apartment, like on a hardwood floor. And like that was one of those first moments where I was like, I can't just own a couple pair of sneakers. I have to have like a rotation. I have to have like a collection. I remember that from this is like 2008 or 2009 or 2007 or something like that.
So and that's
like,
amazing. Yeah. You know, you were looking at photos of how she set up shoes and he was drinking hot sauce to get into the skateboard. So
yeah, definitely.
That's called duality, my brothers.
Both sides of it.
Thank you so much. This is the Complex Sneakers Podcast, available everywhere Friday mornings. We'll see you next week. Our producer is Shiva Bayet. Special thanks to Dave Matthews and Jennifer Stewart. The Complex Sneakers Podcast is a production of the Complex Podcast Network.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.